macrocosm are undeniably groundbreaking. Sunday night at 8:55 p.m. Pacific Standard Time, tune into Windows into Eternity for the most cutting-edge discussion of Ascension 1 and 5.
Hi, everybody. This is Senia Sieber, and you're listening to Dr. Bell. Well, I forgot to say who I am. Sorry about that.
Yeah, go ahead. We'll keep that, Don. Be sure and keep that in there. I like those.
Working on your favorite project. You are about to learn more about who we are, why we are here, and what we may become if you thought possible. We might go a little past your imagination, but have no fear. You will be safely traveling with us. Keep your arms inside the vehicle, recline your chair, look out the window as we launch X Squared Radio. The foundations of religion and science were utilized to write our first two volumes of The Ark of Millions of Years. The third volume, called Unlocking the Secret, is about to hit the presses. We want you to be aware of what is coming. You and I know that your potential is absolutely unlimited. We have crafted the final work of the trilogy, so you have the tools necessary to work the law of attraction. Find out what the ancient masters knew. Learn the methods necessary to affect the universe on purpose for the good of your life. Go to the online store, X Squared Radio, and get your copy on order today. If you have survived the disaster without food and clean water, then you need to visit NitroPack. They have been providing emergency preparedness supplies for more than 19 years. They have everything from 72-hour kits to a full year's supply for an entire family. We wanted you to have access to the best. That is why we searched for many months to find NitroPack. Click the NitroPack banner at X Squared Radio and get prepared. Explorers, welcome to X Squared Radio. We're glad you're here with us tonight. We're coming to you live from Odessa, Washington, up near the Canadian border in what's known as the Eastern Desert. Tonight, the solar wind is a mere 301.6 kilometers per second, and the proton count is way down to 3.5 protons per cubic centimeter. No chance for a sunburn this afternoon. Again, the sun is blank. Not a single spot from solar cycle 24. Is global warming still progressing? An expert from the National Autonomous University of Mexico predicted that in about 10 years, the Earth will enter a little ice age, which will last from 60 to 80 years and may be caused by the decrease in solar activity. Velasco Herrera, described as erroneous predictions of the Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change, pursuant to which the planet is experiencing a gradual increase in temperature, the so-called global warming. In this century, glaciers are growing, as seen in the Andes. Perito Moreno, Logan, the highest mountain in Canada, and with Franz Josef Glaser in New Zealand, said Velasco Herrera. The Perito Moreno, approximately 200 square kilometers, is in the Andes between Argentina and Chile, and is one of the few stable glaciers in the world. The front of the glacier is about 2.8 kilometers long and has a height of about 70 meters above the water level of the lake, although the wall of ice reaches its bed. August 19th, what if you woke up one morning and found your whole planet had been swallowed by the atmosphere of a star? Get out of bed, look out the window, auroras are dancing along the horizon, dark sunspots crackle overhead, each little pop more powerful than a nuclear bomb. On TV, a weather forecaster warns astronauts a solar flare is sure to erupt. Although we can't say exactly when, moments later, the little satellite begins to flicker. Where is this place? Welcome to planet Earth. At first glance, the sun seems so self-contained, a crisp, round ball in the noontime sky. But the edge we see is just the beginning. The sun has a hot, riotous atmosphere called the corona that reaches the sun from the sun's surface past Earth all the way to Pluto and beyond. The corona is seldom seen, only during a total eclipse, but it is there. Like any good atmosphere, the corona has weather, and lots of it. There are billion-ton coronal mass ejections, high-energy radiation storms, and a relentlessly blowing solar wind that gusts up to a million miles per hour. Every comet, asteroid, and planet in the solar system is exposed to these elements. Our planet is better protected than most. We have a thick atmosphere and global magnetic field to hold space weather at bay. In fact, if we stayed on Earth, the sun's weather systems would hardly affect us at all, causing no more than an occasional power outage or radio blackout. And therein lies the problem. We're not staying on Earth. Civilization is spreading into space. We'll have a lot more on that later on in the program. I should also let you know NASA's Living with a Star program was formed in 2001 to deal with this reality. If we're going to live inside the sun's atmosphere, we need to learn more about it, especially how to predict the storms. The Solar Dynamics Observatory, that's the SDO, has a camera on board the observatory that will take high-density television-quality photographs of sunspots and solar flares, revealing the onset of storms in never-before-seen detail. We're going to have that detail for you here. If you just go to x2-radio.com, we'll keep you as enlightened as we can about what's going on the sun. The last couple of weeks, we had to run some archives. I have been traveling quite a bit, getting ready to launch this biodiesel plant up here in Odessa, and we're having a lot of fun with it. It's always a challenge to bring a highly complex project like this to fruition. Our guest tonight was a Navy communications officer. In 1968, he received a distress call from a Navy vessel claiming to have spotted a 70-foot disc that had come out of the sea and launched at Mach 8 straight out into space. There were witnesses and a radar record to back it up. Since that time, he has been active in the UFO disclosure movement. Please welcome with me Dan Willis. How are you, Dan?
Oh, pleasure to be on the show with you, Brooks. I'm great.
I heard that. This is going to be an interesting program tonight, and I'm really glad you all are here to enjoy it with us, because Dan and I, we just communicated literally a few days ago and said, hey, you know, it's been a while, and actually, you know the way these things go. I'm thinking about Dan. I'm going back through some archives, and I'm fixing up some things on the website, and I go, Dan Willis, I haven't had him on the program in a while. I think I'm going to contact him. And he writes me an email. And that's the way it goes with this program. And so it's going to be a special program. I know this. We have been to the limits of credibility and back to to reality on the subject of UFOs. There have been millions of eyewitnesses, but it seems like the closest thing we have to real concrete evidence still lies with the Roswell crash retrieval. Is there something out there, perhaps on the horizon, that will bring us to the point of global first contact? What do you think, Dan?
Well, see, more things coming out in the media. You know, Larry King's been covering it with some of the disclosure witnesses coming out with the skeptics to come back with rebuttals and whatnot. You know, back in 2001, I thought, you know, if you go to court and you have 12 witnesses, right, to witness something and they're all willing to testify under oath, you usually have a slam shut case, right? But you have 500, right. 500 military intelligence witnesses with collaborating documentation, and, you know, 20 of us, you know, went before the National Press Club back in May 9, 2001, willing to testify. Each one of us said willing to testify under oath before Congress, and you know, the testimonies were nothing less than an alien base on the other side of the moon. You have with supporting documentation. You know, 16 ICBMs being shut down. You have case retrievals of 57 different species of extraterrestrials being, you know, characterized. All this went before the major media, and, you know, they say, is there media control, you know? And you'd think with 22 cameras in the back row, not an inkling about, you know, illegal secret government operations, and all the other testimonies that were brought forth that day has really made it to the mainstream media.
That was really an interesting program. I remember that in May of, I believe it was 2001. Was it 2001? I think it was. Anyway,
yeah.
I was sitting there watching television, getting ready to sit down and eat dinner, and I thought I'd turn C-SPAN on just for the heck of it. You know, I like to watch politics in action every now and then. And here is this program.
So you just happened to catch it.
Yeah, I mean, it was just like, you know, synergy or something. And Stephen Greer was on there, and he introduced everybody. And I don't think I finished my dinner. I mean, my jaw was just on the coffee table in front of me. I was just going, holy cow, this is it. This is the shoe dropping. We're going to see it all now. They're going to open everything. And here it is on mainstream TV, about as mainstream as you can get. And not a word since then.
Oh, you caught the entire event on C-SPAN then.
Right. I watched it, you know, as it unfolded, the National Press Club event. That was really, really something.
Yeah, not everybody watches C-SPAN. You know, with CNN, they did a little five-minute blip that just came on, and that was it. You didn't hear anything more of it. What they said, you know, it's interesting how they edit things and how they report, you know, events and information. Because what they said was that, you know, a group of citizen military coming to lend their voice that we're not alone in the universe, and they want to have a congressional hearing based on the belief that we believe there's UFOs, you know. And, you know, the average guy is sitting back and is, you know, watching television, and they think, well, hey, what good does that do? How does that affect me, you know? Well, how does that impact the average person? And the event, if it had the disclosure on the mainstream media, would have had a, I can't imagine, you know, what type of a change the entire paradigm on the planet would have been if the entire event was fully disclosed and covered the way it, you know, it should have been.
Well, you know, it seems like here we are a little over 7 years later, and there seems to be a global change going on. It isn't the number of UFO programs. It's the quality of them that is remarkable. I mean, hardly a week goes by that Fox News, Larry King, Good Morning America, or, you know, somebody, one of those programs has a witness or a scientist on to talk about UFOs. I was flipping through the channels the other day and went by Larry King, and Robert Sala was on there, and he was talking about, like you had said, the UFOs that interfered with the operations and testing of some warheads, nuclear missiles that were still in the silos, taking them offline. Remarkable thing about that program, everyone on there except Larry was named Bob. And then the science guy comes on and tries to refute these eyewitnesses, and they ate him for lunch.
Yeah, the skeptic. It was interesting. Yeah, I went on Capitol Hill with Robert Salas, the different senators and congresspeople, and sort of spent some time, you know, with each other. You know, it was interesting. His testimony, here he has the Office of Special Investigations paperwork, completely backs us up. He brings his captain, you know, his commanding officer with him online. Nuclear missiles, they have, the skeptic is saying, oh, you know, I hear there was an air conditioner trouble or something like that, and it's probably why the missiles went down. And here they have redundancy systems, you know, at least three redundancy systems backing up on each missile. And for all eight of them to go down, then they went, you know, 60 miles away and was witnessed by several of the guards at the other and did the exact same thing. And the skeptic is saying, oh, was the air conditioning system caused it to go down? And then they were saying that, oh, well, the guards, you know, probably imagined something, you know, and here are the guards up about 65 feet down in the capsule, the control room down below, and the guards are up at the gate with all their weapons drawn, talking in a very nervous tone, because there is this thing about 100 feet away from a glowing red disc, you know, and for the skeptic to say that, and including with this with Air Force Special Investigation documentation to back them up, saying, oh, you know, maybe it's just, you know, hallucinate, you know. And it was interesting that a prior show where they had John Callahan, who was the third highest in the FAA administration, here he had all this information, which was the military, the Japanese airline radar. He had the computer printouts. He had all this information on this UFO that was about four times the size of the 747 of this Alaskan flight over, this Japanese flight flying over Alaska. And here this giant circular sphere with lights spinning around it. You know, the admiral called in everybody. The CIA swore everybody to secrecy, that the event never happened. And there was all these different people, you know, working in the scientific community and everything. And they made him give all the information he had. But when he retired, they didn't know that he had backups of all the information. And so he came to the press club. He was the first witness, and, you know, had all this information. And then when he went on Larry King, the skeptic was saying, oh, well, Jupiter was in the sky that evening. You know, it just amazes me. It's almost as though it's crafted, you know, with the skeptics. The skeptics are so unrealistic. And another Larry King special, they had a Professor Jacobs, who back in 1967, I believe it was, they were doing a launch, or planning on exploding a new weapon on the moon, from my understanding. And here they had this long-range telephoto off of Vandenberg of shooting the missile as it's going up through the clouds, They got a clear shot of it. And a UFO comes in, into the frame, circles the warhead, and as it's circling, it's shooting a plasma beam from different angles, and then the warhead is rendered inert. And the skeptic is saying that, and this A comes in, of course, confiscates this and swears in the secrecy as well, and the skeptic is saying, you're saying that it's extraterrestrials then. And he's saying, well, we didn't have any technology at that time that could do anything like that. So every time they brought a skeptic on with Larry King, they've always had very credible witnesses with very solid evidence, and they have a skeptic that looks questionable. But I realize they have to do that in order to, you know, balance the scales. But it's almost as though they're wanting to seed. You know, if somebody who was just watching that and had no background of studying the subject at all and would look at that, and they would come to the conclusion that, well, maybe there's something to this, you know?
Hmm. Well, that's the thing. It's just, it's a plethora, a repetition of quality, credible, educated, historical witnesses that are coming forward time after time, and yet, even Stanton Friedman will be the first one out there to say, look, photographs are no longer good enough. We want a part, a gear, a door, a wing, something, hard evidence off of one of these crafts so that we can say, here it is. Here is a piece of metal or a piece of living ship tissue that we don't have on this planet. And that's the thing that really stops people in their tracks. They're saying, all right, all the witnesses are fine, but with all that and with all the supposed government cover-ups, where's the hard evidence? And, you know, it's going to take some momentum to get those archives opened up, those safe doors, those warehouses where, sort of like Indiana Jones, they've got, you know, warehouses full of wooden crates with all of this evidence, you know, documents and photographs and unretouched slides and, you know, the stuff, the hard evidence. Somebody is keeping it all. And I guess what we're wondering as the general public is, what are they keeping it for? What are they afraid of us knowing about?
Yeah, it's a very complicated issue, isn't it? And it definitely seems like the United States seems to be the main controlling element in this. And, you know, about, you know, any type of, you know, if you look at today's movies, you know, the animation and things they can do is like, you know, maybe something back in the 40s, but even nowadays they can reproduce, just about anything could be hoaxed or faked. That's why I think what really represents solid evidence is when you have hundreds of these witnesses that, you know, have collaborating documentation, don't know each other, that, you know, especially how people are willing to testify under oath before first years, not, people have nothing to gain, you know, by getting involved in this. And more than often, you know, people have had their lives threatened or, you know, jobs ruined. And, you know, there's nothing to gain in, getting involved in the UFO issue. So when you have that many people.
Yeah. I could tell you from personal experience.
You've got something.
Selling a few dozen books, believe me, it doesn't pay you back for the inconvenience that being vocal on this subject brings you.
Yeah, you have to think about, okay, if they made contact back in the 40s, and there's an interesting, you know, series of events, you know, that, you know, we had, what, July of 47, they had the Roswell incident, and then just a few weeks later, the CIA was formed, and then, the events that unfolded from that time, there seems to be an interest, you know, like, you know, Colonel Corso, his testimony is that, you know, the corporations came in and reverse engineered a lot of the technology, and I know there was some controversy on that, but, you know, if there was, you know, fiber optics and Kevlar and, you know, night vision, all these different, and integrated devices from these down crafts that the corporations were highly compartmented, you know, unacknowledged operations that disseminated into the civilian sector. What are they going to do when they discover they have anti-gravity and they have free energy? You know, what are they going to do with that? They'd have to make a decision. Are we going to let this out to the public? And the corporations, you know, are deeply tied into, you know, some of the wealthiest people are invested into the oil industry and, you know, industrial military complex. Are they going to let that information come out and completely destroy their empire?
Well, you know, that's a good argument. I've had people say, well, gee, that's why they can't let the UFO information out, because the economy as we know it would collapse. And I haven't found that to be the case historically. For instance, in these smaller communities where they have like an Air Force base and the announcement is made, we're going to close the Air Force base. Why? The local community just protests and calls up their congressmen and their senators and they begin lobbying. And inevitably, the base closes. And then private enterprise moves in and the entrepreneurs move in and they start picking up where the Air Force or where the Army left off. And 5 years later, there's five times as many jobs, a lot better paying, and they're all civilian, and the base is humming like a little beehive with activity. I just don't see that the economy will collapse if all of a sudden there's a new energy source that you can drop under the hood of a car and never have to burn petroleum again. I just don't see it collapsing.
No, 100%. I'm 100% with you on that, Brooks. You know, it's not a matter of if it's going to improve the situation on the world. You know, it's a matter of, you know, who's maintaining control. And, you know, it's, you know, if you tell a lie, you know, and what happens over time, it's a lie to cover that lie, and it gets to the point, if this is true, now we're speculating, right, you know, on this, because we don't have any hard fact evidence, we don't have any documented proof that this is happening, but we certainly have a lot of indicators that this is true. The fact that, you know, the gas-guzzling, expensive gasoline vehicles that we're running today, you know, all these years of evolution, you know, just think last 100 years how much we've evolved, but we're still running Henry Ford internal combustion engine.
Well, it would be nice if we were running the Henry Ford version, we would be burning alcohol and not petroleum.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah, that's a big difference. You know, speaking of seeing is believing, I met a gentleman, and he was on this program a while back, and he uses night vision goggles. His name is Ed Grimsley, and he claims that there are whole fleets of UFOs zooming overhead all the time and that they are not really getting along with each other up there. Do you think that there is some kind of war going on over our little blue planet, and we're just unaware of it?
Yeah, I've heard something like that about him and his claim that's what's going on. Well, there's a lot of people with night vision goggles out there, and if that was true, it seems that would be fairly easy to substantiate, wouldn't it?
Well, I've looked through the goggles myself, his goggles. And I did see, you know, craft flying overhead. I have to admit, I didn't spend enough time with them to actually see conflict going on overhead. But you could definitely see a lot more going on up there than you can with the naked eye.
Well, we know from witnesses that our government has got, you know, about half the things that are out there are made in USA, and the other is from, you know, who knows what's going on in the black op projects that are going on, you know, like it's famous quote from Bed and Rich, you know, head of Lockheed Skunk Works, that anything you can imagine we've already done, and we already have the ability to go to the stars and beyond. You know, he said this before he died. It almost as though there's like two different worlds going on. One that, you know, we have NASA with its rockets heading up into space, and it takes all that jet fuel, and we have SETI out there trying to find extraterrestrial life, you know, and we have our normal science that's in all the science journals and everything. And then there's another world going on that has technology that would appear as almost to be, you know, as I say, in the future, if we were to look at technology, it would appear as being magic, you know, to us.
Sure, sure,
and,
yeah.
And, you know, we have witnesses that are involved in targeting down the extraterrestrial vehicles, even though they have not shown hostility. What they've done is essentially just, you know, shut down nuclear weapons. And there's a long history of that. And that could be construed as being a, you know, a, an act of aggression, but if nothing's getting blown up and no one's getting killed,
But you and I are both veterans, and you've heard the term clear and present danger, and also a sovereign airspace. And we're really, I know I've worked at a couple of Air Force bases that were border states, North Dakota being one of them, tropical paradise that it is. And I can tell you, when things cross the Canadian border, they get really excited. So the airspace over the United States, we do not even allow foreign-made aircraft to go point-to-point inside our country. They can come here and they can leave, but they can't fly from, say, Denver to St. Louis. That we don't allow, not even for cargo planes.
Well, yeah.
Anything that's flying up there that doesn't have what we call an N number, you know, the tail number, it doesn't belong here, and they don't want it flying in the air. They're starting to clamp down on ultralights because ostensibly you don't really need a license. They can't really track who's going up in the airspace, and these things have a ceiling of 10,000 feet, so they can, you know, they're like little predator drones there off the radar screen, out of communication, and yet they're in the airspace of the United States, and they're, every single year, they come out with more and more regulations governing ultralights and home-built aircraft. But as far as I know, I haven't seen one of those make a left-hand turn at 10,000 miles an hour. But when I asked Stephen Greer if we actually have such a critter, he didn't say yes. He said, hell yes, we have it.
Yes, that's my understanding, too, from witnesses and things. You know, so, you know, it's one thing, you know, regular technology that everybody's aware of, versus this interdimensional, you know, faster-than-light craft, you know, it's like a whole other world. You know, it's so far beyond our current technological level, but it's, you know, we can't even, you know, begin to comprehend some of the, it's, you know, you can imagine, my God, you know, if we were on another planet that was thousands of years in advance, they would have a greater understanding of what we as beings are and how, you know, time and space and and how, you know, it's my understanding that these craft that they build are actually formed out of primordial matter, and it's actually imbued with consciousness that interacts with the pilots of the craft, so that there's a symbiotic relationship between the craft and the pilots. So, you know, we may have things that we can target our guns according to where our eyes look with computer screens, and, you know, and they're getting more into our thoughts, triggering weapons and things like that. We're still a long ways from being able to interface consciousness with mechanical apparatus to accomplish different tasks.
That's interesting. I kind of feel a little bit like Will Smith. I mean, I got to get one of those. So is there, you know, forget about elected officials. I mean, we're not going to get anywhere with disclosure with elected officials. They're part-timers, and they're in and out almost before the batteries run out in the cameras. Is there any hope that someone in the bureaucracies in our government will let a little file drawer or two be revealed to the public?
I know there's those that want to, you know. I know there's, they're aware of, you know, there's people in our military and there's people in our government that want to see this come out. And I know the type of opposition that they run up against when they try to do something like that. It's my understanding, again, I don't know if this is true or not, but when, you know, a senator or a congressman actually goes in to investigate one of these projects, they have these dummy projects set up to act as a decoy. It really doesn't get into the core issue. So they've got it pretty well, you know, with a combination of unacknowledged special access projects where no one is given awareness that these things exist unless you're on the access list. They operate pretty much above the law and free of any checks and balances. And
I know the bureaucrats don't make that good of money, and, you know, they have about as good a job security or maybe better than anybody in the private sector, but I know they don't make that much money. What is it that they have to lose by letting us see behind the curtain?
Well, they don't have the, it appears, you know, again, everything I say, Brooks, the only thing I base everything that I know of is based on, you know, witness testimonies and, you know, and all I can say is with things like that, it's like there's many indicators that people on Capitol Hill really don't have the power to access these projects that are hidden.
Exactly. You know, some people ask me when I'm out at various expos or just out playing darts one night, is there a central clearinghouse for all this UFO stuff, or is everybody sort of making their own deal with the off-worlders?
Could you clarify that a little bit more?
Well, I mean, it's pretty clear that UFOs aren't just visiting the United States. They're visiting all countries, especially ones that have a plethora of raw materials like iron and tin and copper and gold and uranium and things like that. And maybe a lot of them are not even in countries. They're in the mountains or they're under the ocean. But lots of people are having contact with them. If you don't believe me, I mean, I know you know this, because there's a whole culture of people out there that claim they're having regular contact with off-worlders. But is there some government or some agency that's trying to be the central clearinghouse that sort of goes and vacuums up all the scenes and gathers all the evidence into one place.
Oh, you mean like a sort of like a Men in Black type of operation that?
Yeah, like a Men in Black. Like, yeah.
Well, well, let's say there's. I know of some people personally that have had interaction, and I did a radio show. This one lady from New Zealand that had a remarkable experience of, you know, being taken, you know, and seeing their world and things. You know, she's been intimidated, you know, fingers broken and things like that. There's, you know, the witnesses have been threatened, you know, their lives and their loved ones and being erased. And, you know, there's lots of threats, you know. So apparently there's some kind of organization that's keeping a check on this and that wants to keep a lid on the matter.
Interesting. Interesting and curious, and we want to get as much evidence as we can from every source that we can. I think we have a caller on the line. Caller, your first name and where you're calling from, please.
Bill from Nevada.
Bill from Nevada?
Laurent, Nevada.
Okay, welcome to the program.
Thank you. You definitely have, government definitely does have airships that are controlled by the mind.
This guy's on a cell phone.
All right, well, can you speak a little more clearly? I know you're on a cell phone, and we don't have a problem with that. We just want to get the signal and your question as clearly as we can. You said
okay.
That you definitely, there we go, definitely what out there?
Yeah, they definitely are controlled by the power of the mind. When you put your hands on the handle, your fingertips are almost needed. When you put your fingertips on them, you become part of the ship. And they can control the maneuvers of the craft. If you think you want to go left, you think left, it goes left. If you want to go right, you think right, it goes left. If you want to hover, you can hover, and it hovers. We have 67 of them.
Wow. And where are they located? Are they military in nature, or are they paramilitary?
No, they are military. They're in the lower sections of Area 51.
Do we use them in combat, or are they just air show material, or are we using them for off-planet excursions?
No, they're not used for off-planet excursions. They're being formatted with weapons. They can run circles around the present aircraft that you normally see in the skies. And they're quite maneuverable and quite that you can turn L-turns, figure eights, things of this nature without any G-force action at all.
Must take a pretty special pilot to handle a craft like that.
Actually, it doesn't. Your conventional pilots can handle them. They just have to be instructed on how to do it. And they are being instructed on how to do it. I myself, I was stationed in Area 51 for 11.5 years.
Wow. That is amazing. Now, if you have that work experience, do you have at your disposal or in some archive somewhere evidence that you could get to?
Unfortunately, no. My records are sealed. I have tried to get my records myself, and I've been told they are non-negotiable. they took away my attention as I was talking about it. So I no longer receiving my attention from the military. because it opens up, as it were, to speak. But I don't mind talking about it because the public has a right to know. And another thing that is shocking to a lot of people, our Earth is hollow as well.
We'll cover that in a lot more detail later. Dan, do you have any questions for our guest?
It sounds like he's definitely involved with some of the projects. I don't know what to ask.
I would want to know maybe. What's the power source? Is it run on a D-sized battery, or is it a special energy pack, or does it tap into some outside energy?
It runs off electromagnetism. The atmosphere.
So it just runs on planetary magnetism, or universe magnetism, or just stray magnetism that's in the galaxy, or just local
universal
power.
Universal magnetism. Yes, they do have time travel capability as well as interdimensional capabilities as well.
Well, anything that can travel superluminal, we physicists are pretty sure would be able to crack the time barrier. Somebody asked me one time if I thought time travel would ever be invented, and I said, well, if it's ever invented, I don't care if it's a million years in the future, it exists right now, because this is the time they're going to come back to visit. So it exists right now.
Yes, it does. The Manpower Project was a time travel tear.
Well, so then no one's going to be able to get away with anything. If they can travel in time, they're just going to come back and fix it.
Yes, they were contemplating going back in time to the 9/11 to reverse that incident, but they decided against it.
There's been some pretty strange things happen. I was pretty sure Jack Palance was gone, and then he's not gone.
No.
So, pretty strange stuff. You know, you open Pandora's box, and then 3 hours is just not enough to talk about it on the radio.
That's true. Not enough time.
I kind of feel like the movie that they made with Will Smith and Tommy Lee Jones, Men in Black, where they just sort of hold the little memory pen up and flash the light and give you a new memory. That's the kind of power that someone who can travel through time has, because they can just keep going back and preventing the meeting or preventing the disclosure, and then a new future happens.
Yeah, back when I lived in California, I had some men come to my apartment trying to convince me not to talk about what I was talking about, and I dismissed them because I wasn't worried about their abilities or anything other than that, because I know I'm protected and I'm not going to be haunted by them.
Well, that's what Stephen Greer says. He says, stay in the light, and they can't bother you. Right, Dan?
All there is light, so.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Well,
I wish I could hear the gentleman better. It's kind of a bad connection, but... If he is indeed of knowledge and wishes to join hundreds of disclosure witnesses, I would ask of him to go to the disclosureproject.org site and contact them. There's greater strength in numbers, and especially when, people call in and who knows
who knows what's real and who knows what's not, you know?
Did you hear that?
Yeah, I heard that.
Okay. Well, I would encourage you to do that. I know that I've met several of the witnesses. I have spoken to them on the phone, and I've spoken to them in person. And they are credible, powerful, and convinced of their of the factual nature of their experience. And it's not to be set aside lightly, and I don't think they're alone. I think there are even more witnesses than that that are just waiting for the right opportunity to come forward. And if we would just establish some kind of amnesty program for those who are actually inside the government and inside these bureaucracies, where they would suffer no retribution whatsoever for coming forward. They just come forward and tell us, yeah, okay, it's all true, and here's the evidence.
Yeah, I've had people to give me some Benadryl and also hypnosis to test my knowledge, and they come up with the same answers, and it kind of shocks them.
Well, that's great. But, you know, all the signers of the Declaration of Independence were financially or personally destroyed. Safety in numbers doesn't mean a whole lot unless there's some kind of legal shield that you can put up and say nothing is going to happen to you if you come forward and help set us free.
But everybody and their grandmother knows about Roswell. But they don't know what transpired at that time. What that was all about was it was ambassadors from the Hollow Earth coming forth for a meeting. It's all the meeting that was taking place at Roswell, and the ship that crashed was their escort craft that had the small grazer.
Wow. This subject gets so huge that it just leaves you speechless. How much there is to talk about on this subject. We're coming to the top of the first hour, caller. We appreciate the call. Please call back anytime and be sure to tell a friend about us, because you know we're webcast talk radio, but we are fast overtaking broadcast radio. No commercials, and we do not hold back anything. We go completely to the end of the subject, well beyond the imagination of most. So make sure they hear about us out there in Nevada, okay?
Well, okay. If you want my contact number, I can give it to you right away.
Don't give it out on the air, but go ahead and email me. Just bagnew@x2-radio.com and just email me that, and I'll get it to the right people for you, okay?
Okay.
All right. Dan, we're coming to the top of the first hour. I cannot believe it's been like 8 minutes and the first hour is gone. in the next hour, let's talk about some of the really modern astronomy that's going on right now, perhaps some of the reasons why those programs were launched, and what's being discovered out there. Some pretty interesting stuff, to be sure, and we're going to talk about it after this break. And my guest is Dan Willis. Don't go away. We have two more hours to go. This is a three-hour program, so hang in there. We'll be back after these messages. Foundations of Religion and Science were utilized to write our first two volumes of The Ark of Millions of Years. The third volume, called Unlocking the Secret, is about to hit the presses. We want you to be aware of what is coming. You and I know that your potential is absolutely unlimited. We have crafted the final work of the trilogy, so you have the tools necessary to work the law of attraction. Find out what the ancient masters knew. Learn the methods necessary to affect the universe on purpose for the good of your life. Go to the online store at X Squared Radio and get your copy on order today. If you have survived the disaster without food and clean water, then you need to visit NitroPack. They have been providing emergency preparedness supplies for more than 19 years. They have everything from 72-hour kits to a full year's supply for an entire family. We wanted you to have access to the best. That is why we searched for many months to find NitroPack. Click the NitroPack banner at X Squared Radio and get prepared. Have you ever thought about owning a telescope? I mean a really good telescope. Well, at the Discovery Store, you can find the world's best telescopes at great discounts and free shipping. They have come a long way, you know. Most of the comets discovered in the last 50 years were found by amateurs. There is no better way to view the sun than with a coronoscope. Trust me, you will be captivated if you ever get to watch the sun through one of these units. Who knows? You might just save the planet. So plan a trip to the Discovery Store at X Squared Radio. This is Brooks Agnew with X Squared Radio with a message for our friends in the radio broadcast world. If you have noticed that your listeners aren't around anymore, it's because they are right here with us. If you would like them back in your radio fold, then all you have to do is add X Squared Radio to your program content. The statistics don't lie. We are now the fastest growing talk radio program in North America. Don't be late, because we are about to launch another hour of X Squared Radio. From Eastern Washington State, our AccuWindow forecast says it's about 82 degrees outside. Sun is shining, and no chance of shooting stars or aurora borealis tonight, I'm afraid. Did want to remind you that the phone lines will be open for the remainder of the program. Anywhere toll-free in the United States, 888-228-4494. And we also have a toll-free number for those of you in Canada. That number is 877-489-6350. Anywhere else, on planet, off planet, if you want to reach us, you can get to us, 530-776-5154, or you can reach us at 776-5185. And we want you to try to call in, because our guest tonight, he's been with us before, but we just have a fantastic time with him, and he is probably one of the more knowledgeable about the UFO disclosure witnessing that's been out there. And it's the incredible thing about it is that it's real, that the people who are out there have put their reputations on the line, they've put their pensions on the line, And this is the guy. If you have ever had a question about some witness that you've heard on a talk show or a C-SPAN program, as we were talking about earlier, the National Press Club airing that happened back in May of 2001, this would be your chance to ask that question. If you're listening to this on an archive, we're going to give you a website, and it's called DisclosureProject.org. And this is sort of the national effort to see if we can get the, let's call them the powers that be, those that hold onto the archives, have the libraries, the photographs, the hard evidence, the circuitry, the craft themselves. They've either worked on them, they've handled them, they've flown in them, or they've seen them, and we want those people to come forward and tell their story. It is time that we came out and told this story once and for all. And I also want to remind you, if you are interested in buying the Ark of Millions of Years, it was really a very incredible experience to watch the sales the last few weeks. That book launched about 3 weeks ago. It was an immediate Amazon bestseller, Barnes & Noble bestseller, and now it's going into Europe and New Zealand. We're getting orders all over Canada, and we appreciate it. It's been a long time coming. Three books, 1,500 pages, the most comprehensive work just about ever done on the 2012 end times, and we may talk a little bit about that tonight as well. And what happened is at the end of that journey, we kind of realized, as you have, that the 2012 story kind of leaves you with a feeling of doom and gloom, that everything is going to end, we're going to have a terrible cataclysm, we're going to have solar flares, earthquakes, volcanoes, tidal waves. Okay. But in the last volume, volume 3, we titled it Unlocking the Secret, because we wanted to leave you with a message of hope and some tools that you could use to prepare yourselves and maybe change the course. Yes, change the course. You don't realize the power that you have. Dan was talking earlier about an engine, a chip, that actually functions interactively with human consciousness. That is not as far out as you think it is. And, in fact, it may be right on the money. If you're interested in that, we have a special for you. We're going to sell all three volumes as a set, 25% off. Now, that offer is going to be launched tomorrow. That's Monday. This is Sunday. If you make the purchase tonight, we're going to give it to you. But tomorrow we're going to launch that, and we're going to limit it to 500 orders, no more than that. We just can't handle another onslaught like we had. So 500 orders, that's it. It's a fantastic Christmas gift. Now, the book covers have just been redone. Roy Young, a fantastic cover artist, has just completed, and the publisher has re-released the books with new covers. So if you have anyone that you know that's interested in the 2012 end times or in the origin and destiny of the earth, not just from an archaeological point of view, but also with the physics, this is the set for them. And we are going to begin recording Volume 3 on the audio. So then all three books will be on audio as well. They're not done yet. It takes about 50 hours to read one of these books into a microphone. So just give us a little time, and we'll have it ready. And also want to let you know that NitroPack has some specials. You heard the ad during the commercial break. NitroPack has some specials now. If you want to get ready for winter, they have got some winter kits that you can put in your automobile, your truck, your rig, even your airplane. If you happen to get stranded in winter conditions, having the right food, a little space blanket, a little pocket warmer could do more than provide you comfort. It could save your life. And That's what we're all about here. We want to make sure you have the tools for that. Also, if you're going to try and call in tonight and you're using Skype, no problem. You can reach us at BBS Radio. And even if you're using PalTalk, you can reach us at BBSRadio_com. We are coming to you live via the BBS Radio Network and also through the Steel Eye Media Network, courtesy of our friend Kevin Smith. Our guest tonight is Dan Willis. You know him from Disclosure Project fame. We're going to go places you have not been before, and Dan's going to go with us. There is some more to learn about these UFOs than you thought possible. I'm going to ask a question now, and we're going to try to maybe explore beyond the realms of Area 51 or Area 11 or wherever they're hiding now, you might think. Dan, what about the chance that there is somewhere secret on the Earth that these fleets are landing and parking for extended periods of time? And I'm not talking about the weekend. I mean they may have been here for thousands of years. Do you think that's possible?
Well, yeah, no. Like my small testimony at the press club was about a craft coming out of the ocean in Alaska. And, you know, what an ideal place to avoid walk-by traffic in the bottom of the ocean, you know. You know, it would seem if you were coming here, it seems like the other side of the moon and underneath the ocean and all kinds of places that you could go if you had technology that didn't have any problem with atmospheres of you know, several depths, you know, at the bottom of the ocean or on the other side of the moon, to keep yourself well hidden while doing whatever operations you're doing here.
You know, there was a television, actually a movie that was out, and it was called The Abyss. Besides being one of the best directed quasi-sci-fi films out there, there was some familiarity with it in that the beings that ended up being part of the movie, and I gotta say that the movie, the one that came out in the theaters, missed the whole point. The main part of the movie got edited out. It wasn't until the video, the DVD was released, that people went, oh, now I get it. It was a major piece left out of the motion picture that was put back in the DVD. And
a big
piece, because in the motion picture that was in the theaters, nobody understood the source of the storm or the tidal wave. It was left out of the motion picture, but in the DVD, some key lines, some key portions were put back into the movie, edited back in, the missing pieces. And then you understood that this was a shot across the bow from a sort of caretaker race that lived under the sea, and they were not happy with the military nature of humanity. And it wasn't until the extreme expression of love and sacrifice between the two stars of the movie that they turned from that mission of literally wiping out 90% of the population of civilization because they live within 20 miles of a coast.
An interesting one.
Well, the interesting thing is that the star ends up at the bottom of the abyss, and he's trudging along, and he enters this area, or he's actually pulled into this area, where the ocean is pushed back. And it's actually open air down there, like a big bubble down there. And maybe that's where these craft lie. They are able to manipulate the ocean back out of the way, where they can literally sit on relatively dry ground on sandy beaches on the bottom of the ocean.
Yeah. Well, when I was with Jaime Musan in Mexico, he had a videotape of some Swedish scientists were watching this volcano that was about ready to erupt. And as they're watching the volcano and their instruments are showing an increase of activity, out of the sky comes a UFO flying right into the volcano. Within a few moments, the whole volcano settles down, and the UFO shoots out of the volcano, goes back out in the sky. So if they can go through molten lava, you know, the ocean's not going to be much of a challenge.
Wow. Now, were they tourists or were they geologists? Did they have cameras running? I mean, tell me about it.
They were scientists. I don't know all the credentials and everything. I saw the videotape of it. They had about 8,000 people in Mexico that they were showing this. And, yeah, it was pretty profound. It was a very clear picture. You could see a disc coming out of the clouds, shooting down into the volcano, and then all the instruments and everything settle down, and then, you know, it shoots out. So apparently they can have an effect on some of the geophysical activity here on this planet.
Well, now that's pretty incredible. That I did not know that. Now, this group, are they touring the country, touring the world, showing this video? Is the DVD for sale? Are they?
Oh yeah. There's. I'll get you some more information, but I'm sure. I can contact Jaime Nissan and get more, you know, greater detail and see if I can get the video for you.
Great. I was recently up at James Gilliland's ranch. You know, you should really consider speaking there next year, next July. You should go to ESETI and you should speak at that conference. It's by all accounts, I think, the biggest UFO gathering in the United States, and I've been to a lot of them, and not the ones in Roswell. These are really purists up here, and it's really amazingly hot UFO activity up there. You should consider doing that. I would definitely support that. And anyway, I was up there taking photographs of Mount Adams with a digital camera, because it's really a spectacular view. And there was a lady next to me who actually works for a government agency, who is there also as an enthusiast, and was shooting pictures with a much better camera than I had. I think this thing must have been 10 or 12 megapixels. And we caught a craft in the air off to the side of that mountain. Both cameras caught the same craft. Now, that's really hard to refute, don't you think?
Oh, yeah. A lot of civilians are having experiences. Even in a little valley that I live here in Southern Oregon, there's a lady who had craft come down, and these military came in with camouflage, and, you know, there's a lot of activity. You know, the hundreds of witnesses is one thing. You know, there's millions of civilian witnesses that are out there. And, you know, the UFO thing's actually pretty easy to comprehend, you know, comparatively to what, you know, is happening here on Earth. You know, you spoke earlier before the hour about how we can say anything we want on this radio show, and apparently we can, you know. You know, a few weeks ago I was on Coast to Coast with George Norrie, and we were talking about the aspect of media control, and George was saying, well, you know, I've never been approached by anybody to say anything or what, you know. It's interesting, you know. Daniel Sheehan, one of the witnesses that joined me, he's a famous attorney in Washington, has a document of 42 CIA and NSA operatives that are in major media executive positions. And we also have a CIA document, you know, that clarifies that they have relationships with every single major, you know, wire and news service that they can, you know, kill or spin a story in the interest of, you know, quote, national security. And, you know, you know, after the press club and after CBS did an interview with me, and I toured across half the United States with Dr. Greer, and every single time I would make note of how the local medias would cover the event. And every time, you know, without exception, you know, in San Diego we had dancing alien dolls, in San Francisco they said the disclosure is looking to aliens to solve the world's energy problems, and, you know, and on and on and on. Every single major city without exception, you know, I can't say, Brooks, that I know firsthand that such and such was contacted by CIA and SA operatives and said, oh, you have to cut this out. You can't allow this to say. You have to make fun of it. I can't say that, but it's interesting when you come out saying that there's illegal secret government operations and we categorize 57 different species, and the media comes out in a speculative kind of, well, these are UFO people wanting to look into the reality of UFOs, when we're, in fact, we've already established and willing to testify under oath, you know, and breaking our national security oaths on top of it all. You know, it's interesting, Sarah McClellan was a famed White House correspondent, and she was the one who sponsored the disclosure event back in 2001. And she was quoted saying that George Bush Sr. said to her that, she said, Sarah, if they ever find out what we've done, they, you know, chase us down the road and lynch us. You know, this is from George Bush Sr. So, you know, when you say they need an amnesty program, that's probably in the minds that, you know, they're probably, everybody would want to lynch, you know, when you think about, you know, all of the things that didn't have to happen in this world if, you know, like what you were talking about earlier, if we could change the paradigm, you know, from this war industry into like a space industry, or develop, you know, third world countries have come up to our level, you know, the whole quality of life on the planet, so the billions and billions of dollars to our military and weaponry systems that are going on, this continual loop that has to perpetuate itself by its very nature, you know, it would be quite a different world.
Well, I think so. I mean, you have in the area of energy or the area of space research or even inner space research, nanotechnology, most of the serious risk funding comes from military sources, and thus the scientific results of the experiments, the working prototypes, don't belong to the general public for decades, until after the military has exploited them for the best weaponry or the best detect-only technology or the best propulsion technology that they can find, and they really don't want, quote unquote, their enemies to get the same technology, at least not for a few decades until they've got the next generation out there. And I'm sorry, but that's the reality of it. And it's an unfair advantage, because with every other kind of research, medical research, private industry research, we have to struggle with angel investors, banks, you know, venture capitalists and investors, and it is a horrible world tied up with securities fraud and banking and taxes, and what happens is we don't get our ideas out. The inventors don't get their ideas out, their prototypes built, their plants built, because they don't have the same advantage of a bottomless pit of black money that just keeps funneling and funneling and funneling toward it until the darn thing works, because it has military applications. either for us or for our enemies. That's the sad truth of it. And it's honestly a point of fact that he who controls the air controls the surface, and he who controls space controls the earth. And you're not going to get around that unless there's a change in the mindset that we are not a planet of countries and nationalities and tribes, but we are a planet of a single species.
Yeah, so true. And the whole thing about controlling space, you know, Dr. Carol Rosen, who joined me, who was the spokesperson for Dr. Wernher von Braun in the last years of his life, you know, spoke of the, he was obviously involved in the secret government. And, you know, he spoke of that they had long-range plans of perpetuating the military-industrial complex by having different false flag scenarios. You know, they had first the Soviets, then they had rogue nations, and then we're at the current level of terrorists. They would have false flag events that would, you know, believe that it's a terrorist, but it would be for funding, you know, industrial military complex. And after the terrorists would be, they meant something about asteroids, and then the final card, and he said this on his deathbed, you know, and he would say it to her over and over again, you know, remember, Carol, the final card is the alien card, and they're going to have to make a multi-trillion-dollar weapon system in space to fight against extraterrestrials, but it's all a lie. From what indication we've seen from many witness testimonies, you know, with their advanced technology, it wouldn't take too much of a stretch of imagination that we wouldn't have a chance to go up against them with their advancement of technology. But on the other hand, if they have evolved spiritually in thousands of years of advancement, for them to come in and start with laser weapons, blasting cities like in an Independence Day, you know, it just wouldn't compute spiritually. I guess that's probably the best way to say it.
Well, not only that, if they can time travel, why wouldn't they just come back when we were rubbing two sticks together to make fire?
Yeah, you know, why attack till we have nuclear weapons and everything? They could have attacked us back in 1945 when, you know, Fat Boy was blown up, you know. It's not a matter of like a science fiction movie of us versus them, you know, and they're trying to take over our planet and evil aliens trying to kill us all and then repopulate it with their species or something of that nature, you know. There's something much more to this picture.
Maybe they already have. That's the interesting thing. Well, let's talk about a little bit more about the actual frontier. First, inside our atmosphere, 25,000 light years in every direction, there's nothing like Earth, no place like home. No place out there where you can live on the surface of the planet with nothing but a handful of clothing, if that. No place else on the planet with liquid water, with air that doesn't exist at freezing temperatures or searingly hot. This is a jewel in this part of the galaxy. And maybe we are kind of a tourist attraction. Maybe we are a rare resource, even though, by all accounts, Earth is rather small. There are, and we are discovering more and more of them every day, what we call super Earths. These are Earths that are many, many times our size, but nevertheless M-class. They're low enough in density that they don't have crushing gravity, and they're close enough to the right wavelength suns that they could sustain life, although possibly not on the surface, maybe underneath the surface. But nevertheless, we're probably a tourist attraction, at the very least. So the question has come up, and I think it's come up since, let's call it, the dawn of time. I'm going to say there's probably been many major civilizations on the earth, and maybe their histories have been wiped away, and only those things that could withstand the trials of time and cataclysm are left behind. Those things in stone, maybe, and those things in metal and clay, but not much else. But that being said, there's evidence going as far back as you want to go that visitors have come here from other worlds, either through dimensions or across the chasm of space. Are they still here, Dan, or in this dimension, in the third dimension, in our neighborhood, just out of sight? Or are they able to cloak themselves somehow, or do they exist on the bottom of the ocean? And if so, what's going on down there? And is there more to it than just kind of hanging out and waiting for us to wipe ourselves out with too many French fries?
Mm-hmm. Well, you can answer as good as me, I imagine. it appears with all the sightings that, you know, why would they? I was going through some wormhole or something like that, you know, to another planet. It would seem to make logical sense to have a local base of operations. But, you know, then again, I only know what witness testimonies have disclosed, and anything beyond that is purely speculation, but that would make sense, though.
Did you ever communicate with the fellas on the Navy vessel that spotted the 70-foot disc come out of the sea and go zipping out into space?
You know, I would love to. The trouble is, you know, I remember, even though it was way back in 1969, I remember that it was a secret message, and then it was priority, and then it was going in office naval investigations. I know there was a USNS ship off the coast of Alaska. I remember all the details about the craft being 70 feet in diameter, elliptical, reddish-orange, glowing, and shooting off in space, going 7,000 miles per hour. Tracked by the radar operator, but, you know, at the time I was only about 21 years old or so, and I sent a letter to the Office of Naval Investigations. I had enough information to possibly, under the Freedom of Information Act, get that message back, but they came back with a letter saying it's been destroyed. So the only missing part, which is crucial, which I would love to go with a time machine back to 1969, and make close note, because at the time, I didn't even know what a UFO was. You know, I mean, I loved science fiction movies and stuff like that, but when I was coding this message, I was a high-speed code operator at the time, and, I was, decoding and writing this thing out. I couldn't believe I was writing, you know. And, the thought crossed me, I want to take it to a Xerox machine, but, you know, you go with a top secret clearance, you end up in prison with that type of thing. I would have liked to have talked to some of the people who witnessed that on board the craft. On board the ship, rather.
Well, having been on coast to coast recently, both you and I, there are probably people out there who have heard us and who might say, hey, I was on that boat, and maybe they'll come forward and contact us.
Yes, please. and in fact, I...
Well, maybe that's another one now. I think we have a caller on the line. Caller, your first name and where you're calling from.
This is Anne Todd from Chelseaville.
How are you?
I'm good. How are you? I can't hear you very well.
Well, we're talking
a bit louder. Anyway, this is, of course, speculation, too, that I'm listening to you. And in 1979, I was with a group that was having contact with off-planet beings, and they told us that they could not interfere with our free will unless we were going to destroy the planet, which would obviously make the imbalance of our solar system, and that then they could come in. Well, I'm thinking the possibility that we've been doing a really good job on messing up the planet, and maybe it's time for them to come and help us. And I received something recently from a person called Blossom Goodchild, who's in Australia, and she's got a message to say that October the 14th is a date when we may see a huge ship in the, she says, the south part of our hemisphere. But, of course, she's in Australia, so I'm not sure where that would be seen. But it would be here for 3 days and three nights, three 24-hour periods, and bring us a lot of hope. They don't come to hurt us or to take over or distract us. They come to assist us and to give us hope. So it sounds pretty good. So put the date on your calendar, and we'll see.
Yeah, we'll see. October 14th. That's good.
Do you know about that?
Well, no, I haven't heard about that yet.
Write down this name, Blossom. That's an unlikely name, but there it is, Blossom Goodchild, and you can Google her and find out more. It's pretty good.
Okay, we'll do
okay.
it.
Okay. How are you doing, by the way, Brooks? Good?
Well, I don't know. I think I got an email chain from someone of that name or someone who knew that name, and it I don't know, it seemed a little fluffy to me, but I'm going to...
Yeah, well...
I'll do a little more investigation. We'll see.
Well,
October 14th isn't that far away.
Just put it on your calendar, and we'll see. Okay.
Love
you, and I enjoy your program.
All right. Thanks, Ann.
Okay.
Good night.
Bye-bye.
What do you think, Dan? Do you think there's a feeling out there that we're getting close to global first contact? I mean, a time when the cameras will be rolling and there'll be no doubt in anyone's mind what that is.
Well, it does seem that there's a lot of indications toward that. That's about why, huh? Like the church, the Vatican saying it's okay to believe in UFOs now for all the Catholic followers, and you have... the governments, like France coming out with all their documents, and Larry King, coming out with more and more credible UFO, witnesses. There seems to be a wave of movement in that direction.
Well, I know about the wave. I know about... It doesn't take a very observant person, probably casual observation. One could see that since, I'm going to say 1995 or 96, about the time cable TV and cable access began to really get out there, and I think satellite TV just started to make the debut. And this was unregulated satellite TV. These were the big dishes that went out in the backyard, sort of looked like they were tapping into big satellites out there, 23,000 miles out in space. That UFO camaraderie began to grow in a way that it just couldn't grow before. There just wasn't a media. There wasn't a way for people to share information, and I'll go into a little more detail in a minute, but we have one more caller on the line. Your first name and where you're calling from, please.
This is Billy calling from Southern Nevada again.
Oh, much better connection, Billy.
Okay, good. I turned my volume up a little bit. concerning the ship of October 14th, there is something going on there, but there's also it's supposed to happen. The people from the inner world were saying that the contact between the civil population is going to be more frequent and more plentiful
because they've come to the conclusion that trying to contact government officials or military is a lost cause. So they're not going to be doing that any longer, and they're going to be contacting the civil population. So that's what this will be, possibly the beginning of. I heard about this ship on October 14th. It is on YouTube. I saw it on there last night.
Where is the event supposed to take place? What is ground zero for this period?
Ground zero is supposed to be the southern part of the United States.
The southern U.S. Well, they couldn't pick a nicer place, October.
That would be nice, wouldn't it? Also concerning October, when I was younger, I used to have dreams, and my dreams, when I would dream them consecutively several times in a row, usually happened. In the case of 9/11, 8 months before it happened, I dreamed it was going to happen and told the FBI, and they kind of laughed me off. And I also had an incident occur with the earthquake in China that was induced by an underground nuclear test, which caused that earthquake in China. There's another seismic activity supposed to be hitting Southern California this October. If it happens, it's going to be a major catastrophe. You're looking at a 9.6 to a 10.1 in magnitude. If it occurs. I hope it don't. I hope I'm wrong, but at least I'm telling people about it.
Well, that would definitely dump the goldfish out of the bowl, that's for sure. I was in, you remember the movie that they made called Earthquake? It was way back when subwoofers were first brought into movie theaters. The movie they made Earthquake out of. I was in that earthquake in Southern California. That was a real experience. That was, I think, a 6.5 or something like that. I don't ever want to do that again. I mean, if there's a fire, I can run. If there's a flood, I can get to high ground. But if there's an earthquake, there's nothing you can do but jump up in the air and stay there. You just can't get away from it.
That's true. You can't really get away from it. And the interesting part about it was I contacted the Pasadena Seismic Institute and told them about my findings. And I also informed them that I wasn't psychic, and I don't claim to be psychic. I just have dreams that happen all the time. And so I told them about the seismic activity in China, and after that happened, I had their undivided attention. They called me up and asked me questions about what I saw for Southern California. And it's going to be stemming from the Catalina, the Elysian part, and the Inglewood Faults, where they all come together. That's where the epicenter will be, which will be directly under the La Brea Tar Pits. I don't know about this movie you're talking about, Earthquake. I heard about it, but I never saw it. But I'm also been told that the La Brea Tar Pits was part of that movie or something, but I don't know about that. But
There was another movie that came out after that. I think there were three movies called, one was called Towering Inferno, one was called Earthquake, and there was another one out. They all came out cataclysmic movies about the same thing.
Right,
but that footage of the freeways falling down, that was real.
Oh, yes. Yes, it was. Also concerning this event that takes place, it's going to be, it's not going to give a warning or a foreshock as most of them have been getting before a major quake. This is going to be a silent predator, basically. The date I'm getting is October the 18th. It will be on a Saturday before noon in 2008, if it hits. Now, I hope I'm wrong. I mean, it's possible I am wrong, but usually when I have dreams, several dreams in a row, it happens. just like 9/11 happened, and the earthquake in China happened. I was dead on the money on both of them. And so I think I'm dead on the money on this as well. So, and that's going to cause massive tsunamis as well. So people are
maybe,
in Hawaii or Japan.
Maybe the October 14th appearance in southern United States is maybe a warning or maybe a safety call for the October 18th quake 4 days later.
Yeah, could be. Could very well be. Now, concerning you asking questions about the your guest about the existence of where UFOs could land on the surface or anywhere on the on or in the earth, under the ocean is a good place, yes, but the Arctic can't be ruled out either. There is an opening at the Arctic, and it goes into the hollow interior of your planet. So then there is civilization living within our Earth, and that's where 95% of the ships that are in your skies are from. The only other 5% are from without.
Billy, let me ask you a question. Have they always been there long before, you know, McDonald's?
Way back when we were in the medieval times, they were already there, yes. They were there before the continents of Atlantis and Lemuria went under. They were there way before that.
Well,
all
I would say maybe they're happy. Maybe they're happy with the way things are going on the surface, and maybe they're not. I mean, if you look at... Well, if you look at the environment compared to 50 years ago, it's a lot cleaner now. I can tell you, I grew up in Southern California, Simi Valley, San Fernando Valley, Pasadena, and when I was in high school, and this is about the, I think, Dan's day, 1969, I graduated high school in 73, the air was brown. And you couldn't go out in the afternoon and play football in the afternoons because they had air quality alerts all the time. Now
yes.
I go to California, and there's a lot more people living there now than when I was in high school. And the air is clean, and the water is clean.
Absolutely. You know why it's cleaner?
Well,
the reason that it's cleaner, the reason why it's cleaner is because the Hollow Earth people shoot the color green up into the sky, bursts of green light you see occasionally. What that is doing, that is purifying the atmosphere. It's getting rid of the poisons that we insistently keep putting into our air. And what they're doing is they're sending up these bursts of green light, which start cleaning out our atmosphere. Now, another thing that's happening up in the Arctic right now, you have what they call thinning of the ice caps. People are under the impression that that is global warming. It is not global warming. It is meant to happen because the people of the inner Earth want a waterway opened up for the contacting of the outer surface people. And that's why this is being done. That the thinning of the ice cap is for that sole purpose.
Well, I hope so. I hope so, because the Inner Earth Expedition next August will need a clear ice way, a clear sea way, to get to where the historians say they need to go. So hopefully
That's
we'll
correct.
Make it.
Yes, and also The Yamal, being as it's a nuclear icebreaker, it has the capability of reaching that area. But when the waterway has finally been cleared of all ice, which will occur, when that has occurred, then even diesel craft will be able to get in there as well.
Well, yeah, they could make it in there. The problem is it's a long way from base, and they're not going to be able to stay but a day or two. The thing about the Yamal is that's a 15-day expedition. So
yes.
it has a 4.5 year fuel supply. I feel a little safer having that under me.
Yeah, I agree with that, because also I also feel that once you get up there, the mall crew are going to, and the captain himself, when he sees those three glowing discs or four or five, however many discs there's going to be, that will be meeting us up there, when they see that, they're going to probably want to go in as well. And I have a hunch that we might just be taking the icebreaker into the opening as well if we're invited.
I don't know.
Which I'm sure we will be.
I don't know. What do you think, Dan?
Well, I'm just wondering how you get all his information.
Well, yeah, I think Billy has a source that no one else has. Some of the people have different sources. I have a friend, he's been on this program, he's been on Coast to Coast several times, Stan Deo. And, a world-class analyst, and he used a Navy database and some of his own intuition, and he put together a program of coastal earthquake prediction that was so good.
Oh, yeah, I saw that. Very impressive, yeah.
The Navy came to him, and the Weather Bureau and the USGS came to him, and they started using his research because it was so well done. And he nailed not only the timing of the earthquake, but the strength of the earthquake and the location of the earthquake. And it was just matching up, you know, thermal data and seismic data, and it was just so well done, so scientific. But there was also some intuition involved with it, too. It was really incredible. I asked him some questions about the 600 earthquakes that were off the Juan de Fuca plate off the coast of Oregon, because these were really strange seismic activities. You know, there was a lot of geophones sitting on the ocean floor out there that they used to use during the Cold War to listen for the rumble of enemy submarines, and now they listen to whale songs and these rumblings under the ocean floor. The problem is, geologists don't think there's any volcanic activity in that location. It's new, but it sounds just like lava moving underneath the sea floor. And then we have these 600 quakes in a 30-day period, and then they stop. Now, that's really surprising.
Yes. And the thing about the quake in Southern California is that the only warning they're going to have will be from nature, meaning the birds will vacate the area hours before it occurs, or even days. Animals will want to hide. Your cats, if you have cats, will want to hide under the couch or whatever, and dogs will disappear. And even ants and insects will start vacating the area. And that's the only warning they're going to have. Everything else, as far as the foreshocks and things of this nature, are not going to happen in this one.
Wow.
That's what they're really concerned about. So the Pasadena Seismic Center, when I had talked with them before, they said that the area that I spoke of has been silent for several months. And there's not a peep coming from that area. And that's what's got them concerned.
Yeah, that's sort of like when your kids get quiet in the other room. You know.
You know they're doing something.
Yeah. Well, hey, why are you so quiet in the other room? What did you spill? What are you into?
Yeah, and it's the same with this earthquake. It's going to be a silent killer, basically.
Will St. Louis be safe?
Oh, yeah, of course.
Okay.
Oh, I would imagine.
Good.
I think they're going to have, as far as activity, it's going to be felt as far east as Phoenix or Colorado, as far north as Alaska. As far south as Mexico, so it's going to be felt all over.
Well, that's one we're going to have to keep our eyes open for. So we have to make sure we've snapped all the pictures and made all the emails we're going to make after the October 14th UFO appearance so that
right.
we can get ready for the October 18th earthquake. It's just, you know, make sure that the batteries are charged up for the camcorders.
I've tried contacting your story, but I can't seem to get through to him.
I'm not making fun. It's just things are accelerating pretty quickly, and we're accelerating through this program. We've finished our second hour like a lightning bolt. So, Billy,
we'll have no.
What was that?
Well, I was saying we'll have no canary on this next prediction of an earthquake, then.
Yeah, that's
well, you might ask people that have done remote viewing to give you a call in on that, because the ones in Japan and Australia have also come up with the same answers. So that's why I'm felt right to go ahead and speak it forth, you know, because I'm not the only one out there that's getting the same numbers back.
Well, no, you're not, and I have heard this same thing from numerous sources now, so it's beginning to gain a little momentum. Right.
Yes.
Right.
Just like now, this other gentleman was asking me where I'm getting a lot of my knowledge from. Well, a lot of my knowledge, most of my knowledge came from when I was in the service in the Air Force with the Area 51. And because all that stuff came across my desk and I saw it when I was there. So I know a lot of this is happening and is continually happening and is going to continue to happen. But as far as the daytime sightings are going to become more numerous, people are going to see ships in the daytime. These night goggles you were speaking of, a friend of mine had a pair in Mount Shasta, and at night we were looking up on the mountain, we saw nothing but stars. He looks in his goggles, and he sees ships going in and out of Mount Shasta. So,
wow.
So the night goggles do work, and they do, what I'm saying as far as the technology to put these together came from Roswell. So, and the night vision glasses and all this came from the technology they picked up at Roswell. So that's why your night vision goggles are so important to get a hold of if you can get some, because you will see a lot more tips.
Bill, are these infrared or are they starlight type of night vision goggles?
They're just night vision goggles. They're expensive as heck. I wish I could afford one, but I can't.
I think the ones Ed were using were Generation 2 infrared goggles.
Yeah,
Well, go ahead, Dan.
Oh, because there is a difference. You know, the one amplifies all the available light, and the other one looks into the infrared spectrum. That's why I'm asking.
Well,
they look into the infrared spectrum of the ones he was using.
Yeah, these kind of give you a green image. I've looked through them, and it is quite fantastic what you can pick up there. And they are expensive. They start at about $900 and go up to about $4,000.
Yeah.
If you're going to do this, I recommend the 25 millimeter tube, and try to avoid the Generation 1 stuff. Generation 2, Generation 3, and now they've got Generation 4 available. Very, very little amount of light. I looked at some footage that Jose Escamilla had put together, and he took two cameras, bolted them together, shot one invisible and one in infrared at the same area of sky, and you can see the clouds. They match up perfectly in the split screen. On the one side, in the visible light, there's nothing there but clouds and sky. On the one in the right, there's a craft sitting there hovering in infrared band.
Yes. That's right. just like your lenticular clouds that you see in the sky a lot. That, you know, it could be a windy day, and they'll just sit there. They won't move. The reason they're not moving is because there's something in them that's holding them there.
That could be. I don't know. I've seen some pretty strange cloud events, and they kind of defy logic sometimes.
Yeah, they do.
That's it for our second hour. Guys, I'm going to have to break and go to a commercial. Dan, hang with us, because this last hour we're going to go, we're going to try and wrap this thing up and talk more about disclosure and what events are going to happen in the next 12 months. So we'll take a quick break, and we'll be back in about 4.5 minutes after these messages. Don't go away. More of X Squared Radio coming to you.
Bye-bye.
Friends down at NRG Resources have introduced a new engine oil technology. TVT 24/7 is the future of lubrication. This is the industry's first environmentally friendly oil additive that not only increases fuel mileage, it reduces engine, gearbox, and transaxle wear to nothing. The other brands fail anti-friction testing in less than 10 minutes under standard testing conditions. TVT 24/7 went more than 24 hours in the test and still did not fail. Get tomorrow's technology today by visiting the online store at X Squared Radio and pick up TVT 24/7 Engine Oil Energizer. There is some place you should visit before the end of the week. The Horizon Project is probably the most important examination of future events in the world today. But there is a reason you should visit their website soon. I can't give you all the details here, but I can tell you that the first DVD in the 6-part series is now available for pre-purchase at $5 off. This series will no doubt be airing on the History Channel or Discovery Channel, but you need the uncut version with all of the bonus material. Trust me, it may be one of the most important video productions you will ever see. Click on the Horizon Project banner at X Squared Radio today. If you have survived a disaster without food and clean water, then you need to visit NitroPack. They have been providing emergency preparedness supplies for more than 19 years. They have everything from 72-hour kits to a full year's supply for an entire family. We wanted you to have access to the best. That is why we searched for many months to find NitroPack. Click the NitroPack banner at X Squared Radio and get prepared. The foundations of religion and science were utilized to write our first two volumes of The Ark of Millions of Years. The third volume, called Unlocking the Secret, is about to hit the presses. We want you to be aware of what is coming. You and I know that your potential is absolutely unlimited. We have crafted the final work of the trilogy, so you have the tools necessary to work the law of attraction. Find out what the ancient masters knew. Learn the methods necessary to affect the universe on purpose for the good of your life. Go to the online store at X Squared Radio and get your copy on order today. This is Brooks Agnew with X Squared Radio with a message for our friends in the radio broadcast world. If you have noticed that your listeners aren't around anymore, it's because they are right here with us. If you would like them back in your radio fold, then all you have to do is add X Squared Radio to your program content. The statistics don't lie. We are now the fastest growing talk radio program in North America. Don't be late, because we are about to launch another hour of X Squared Radio. Welcome back to X Squared Radio, where the past meets the future. In here, the results are always positive. We're glad you're here with us. Lots of people have been going in there and picking up on NRG resources. They came up with a great lubrication product called TVT 24/7. You heard the commercial. And we have kind of a open call for TVT stories. If you've bought the TVT and you have an incredible testimonial, give us a call. Let us know what your experience is. I have one, an individual who bought a used car, had a 5-speed manual transmission in it, picked up the car in Montana, put some TVT in the crankcase, didn't know the history of the car, took off for Idaho. About a 5-hour drive, got down to Idaho and noticed the transmission was shifting a little stiff, went into a transmission shop, and they said, nothing to worry about, transmission is just a little warm, got a few miles on, and it'll be fine. He said, no, put it up on the rack, I want you to check it out. So they put it up on the rack, and sure enough, it was a 50-cent piece size hole in the side of the case, and all the lubricant was gone. And the transmission shop said, now, where did you drive this car from? Well, we just got in from Hamilton, Montana. They said, there's no way. This transmission would be nothing but iron dust on the inside. That TVT had protected that transmission all the way from Hamilton, Montana. So if you've got an incredible TVT story, give us a call. That product is really taking the market by storm. A test lab called Fuel Only out of Vancouver, Washington, called me the other day and said, what's up with this TVT 24/7? Somebody sent it in for some testing, and we haven't seen anything like this before. This stuff is really an incredible lubricant. So it's growing, people. Head on out there. It's x2-radio.com. Check out the online store. Pick you up some TVT 24/7. Hopefully, before too long, it'll be available in your Jobber Store, AutoZone, Advance, Pep Boys. Keep your eye open for it. TVT 24/7. Engine, oil, energizer. Well, there are some interesting astronomy programs going on right now. You know, there are 68 active NASA programs now out there in space, all of them marginally funded and well staffed by various crumb-chewing grad students who are not really making a great living but are building for themselves a resume for their professorship. And the interesting thing is that the data keeps rolling in, but we're not hearing much. The Chinese launched a high-res photographic probe that went around and around the moon, literally 2,500 feet at a time. They filmed this thing. The first major project that they published was a stitched panoramic view of the moon in which they claimed they discovered a new crater. Turned out to be a stitching error in the photographs. And not long after that, accusations of airbrushing came out. And we haven't heard a peep, not a frame, from the Chinese since. It's been over a year. So our guest tonight is Dan Willis. He is active in the Disclosure Project movement. If you're not familiar with that, go see if you can find the raw footage of the National Press Club, May of 2001. See if you can watch that two-hour, unbelievable, back-to-back eyewitness testimonies of things in the UFO genre that are real. We're not talking about science fiction. We're talking the real deal here. And if you can't get your hands on the raw footage, go to disclosureproject.org and buy a copy. Sit down with a large pizza and watch it. It is worth it. But here's the deal, and I've got a question for you because my guest tonight is Dan Willis, and I want you to help him if you know the answer. You're sitting out there. Even if it's you're listening on the archive, get back with me, and I'll get back with Dan, and we'll get back together, and we'll talk about this again because we're really, really close to getting some of these doors to open up for us. But here's a question for you. What's happening with these high-res probes? What are they finding on the moon that we're not supposed to see? Do you have any ideas, Dan? Dan Willis, are you still with us? All right, well, I'm got to call out to my producer now, see if we can get Dan Willis back on the phone. We've got about 40 minutes left, and I'd really like to know the answer to that question. It turns out that some of the astronauts that are returning from walking on the moon, not the least of which is Dr. Edgar Mitchell, who's been rather vocal lately, but we also have testimony from other astronauts that the message was loud and clear: get off the moon and don't come back. And we really haven't been back since the early 70s. And we've definitely had the capability to go a mere 250,000 miles outside our atmosphere for a long time. For perhaps 20 years, we've been able to make this trip almost routinely. And yet we have not been back. Is it a waste of money? Are there rich resources of H3 on the moon? Enough energy to power whole countries for centuries? Or is there a moon base up there and they don't want us to know? Or maybe they do know and they just don't want to share it with us. In any case, there's a multinational race going on right now to get back to the moon to see what is going on. If you don't believe me, there is a contest going on right now. Wired Magazine is talking about a multi-million dollar contest. Let's see if I can find it here. Okay, I've got it. William Red Whitaker and the Wizards at Carnegie Mellon University's Robotics Institute in Pittsburgh hope to use their expertise to snag $20 million in the Google Lunar X Prize, announced September 13th at Wired Magazine's Next Fest event in Los Angeles. The Google Lunar X Prize is offering $20 million to the first team that can soft land a privately funded spacecraft on the moon. Travel a minimum distance of 1,640 feet, that's 500 meters, and transmit high-definition video and other images and data back to Earth for viewing over the Internet. Second place is worth $5 million, and up to an additional $5 million in bonus prizes can be won by completing extra tasks beyond the core mission. Sound exciting? Well, let's find out what's out there. We have a caller on the line. Your first name and where you're calling from, please.
This is Billy again.
All right, Billy. Are you ready to enter? You ready to enter into this contest?
Well, I'm ready to tell you about the moon, why we don't want to stack up.
Okay.
They don't want to stack, because there is a base on the dark side of the moon. And
both sides of the moon are dark.
The dark side, when you you see from the Earth is definitely a base over there. Just like there's also on Mars, some of the plates or photographic plates where they show the Earth, notice they're not as funny. The reason they're not as funny is because they've seen the skyline of a city. That's why they weren't to the public. So there's definitely something going on.
All right. Well, it's interesting. It's interesting. Let's see. We have more callers coming in, and we always appreciate your input, Billy. No question about it. You have a very unique insight, and you're always welcome here. We have about 37, 38 minutes left in the program. Our guest was Dan Willis. Could have been called away. And maybe it was a misunderstanding on my part that I said, well, we're coming to the end of the second hour. And we appreciate him coming on the program. Dan Willis is one of the most remarkable and steadfast UFO witnesses out there. And he's always welcome on the program. And if we can get him back, I'd appreciate it. Also, you know, in this race to the moon, a mock-up of NASA's Orion space shuttle's successor twisted, tumbled, and fell from thousands of feet up after a parachute failed to inflate properly during a July 31st test. This was not long ago that this thing bounced off the ground. The Orion crew module is part of NASA's Constellation program, slated to return astronauts to the moon by 2020. Orion will carry astronauts into orbit atop the Ares 1 rocket, to dock with an orbiting Earth departure stage previously launched by an Ares 5 rocket, and from there proceed to the moon. Now, this is a really interesting space mission in the sense that we're not going to saddle up on a hydrogen peroxide rocket and try to break Earth's orbit all at one time. We're going to actually put up a pre-launch orbiting station loaded up with fuel relatively inexpensively, put it in orbit at about 18,000 miles an hour, just under the velocity it takes to break Earth's gravitational pull. And once that craft is built up, then we'll launch a more robust travel vehicle up there, dock it with the vehicle that will very easily break Earth's gravitational pull without going through the atmosphere. And then we will be able to make it to the moon with a lot more fuel and a lot more supplies, because once the gravitational pull of Earth is broken, we don't have to worry about 80% of the payload having been spent to get off of Cape Canaveral. And it's a brilliant plan, but it is going to take some logistics and some careful planning. Now, we've been docking and undocking with things in orbit for over 25 years, so it's not going to be that difficult to do that portion of it. But it has been a while, at least in the public eye, that we have left Earth's gravitational field with humans. We don't really know how big the crew is going to be, or if any tourists will be along this time, or if anybody's going to stay, or if we're going to leave something behind on the moon that will serve as part one of many to build a complex. One of the things that we discovered in our moon research, and we do this spectrometrically from the Earth and also from satellites, but we also have samples, is that the soil of the moon is very rich in two components. One is molecular oxygen. That's right. Molecular oxygen in the moon's soil, almost 25% by weight. The other thing that we've discovered is a remarkable little power plant, very difficult to come by here on Earth, called H3. H3 is a triatomic hydrogen molecule. Now, on this planet, we have a couple different forms of raw hydrogen like that. One, of course, is the hydrogen that that lifted the Hindenburg, right? H2. That is molecular hydrogen, or just free protons, like from hydrogen gas. Some of it's H2, most of it's just plain old H. The problem with that gas is it's highly reactive. It loves to, and very easily does it, bond with oxygen to make water. That's the reason why nobody died in the Hindenburg catastrophe, except those, of course, that jumped to their death. But the ones that actually rode the gondola to the ground ended up with their hair wet, but they didn't end up dying. So that's one of the things. The craft didn't explode because it couldn't build pressure, but it was sure making a lot of water at the time. And it releases a lot of energy in doing so. So that's one of the things that's locked into the soil. Oh, I was going to tell you, the other two forms of hydrogen. One is deuterium, and deuterium is hydrogen with a neutron hooked up to it. We use these in lamps to make ultraviolet type of light beam, and we use it in spectroscopy, like in atomic absorption and things like that. And even in also spectrographic analyzers, some of them use deuterium bulbs. And the other is a little element called tritium, and we use that to enrich fusion and fission reactions by feeding extra neutrons to the reaction a few billionths of a second after the initial detonation. And if there was such a thing as controlled fusion on this planet and we were actually using it in power plants, this would be the fuel. It would be tritium, solid tritium or gaseous tritium fed to the reaction. Far less radioactive than plutonium. It doesn't reach criticality. It's a little hard to contain, but it's only reactive for about 12 and a half years instead of 12,500 years like something that gets away from us in the form of plutonium. So this is what the moon is rich in. And if we can set up a shop on the moon and facilitate processing lunar soil in this manner, not only could we create oxygen, which would make a great breathable environment for a moon base, but we'd also be able to use H3 in extremely small amounts to generate very clean, very nice energy to turn turbines, heat environments, provide light, electricity, just about anything that you need. And the other thing that's been discovered deep in the lunar soil, locked in, is molecular water. It doesn't take much to make water once you have hydrogen and oxygen. And so now we've got oxygen, we have air, and we have energy. It doesn't sound like you need much more to get things going in a big way on the moon. And if we can do it here in the beginning of the 21st century, certainly other civilizations, much more advanced than ours, advanced enough to be able to travel from solar system to solar system at least, can do it as well. So it's not so outlandish to say something has been photographed on the moon that we're not supposed to see on the evening news. And of course there are those individuals out there, some credible and some perhaps a little speculative, who talk about airbrushing and negative swapping and maybe even falsifying photographic data so that we end up on the wrong trail. Or when we're having those deep discussions at our family reunions, not enough evidence to really make the case against the old-timers. And I can tell you some of those old-timers are still convinced that we never went to the moon. That's right. They think the entire thing was hoaxed. And actually, I'm not really convinced that they are not ill-informed. I just think that they're of the generation of show-me folks that really want to see some evidence. And I'm a little bit that way, too. You know, being a scientist, it's okay to say,
"Your guest is back."
I believe or I hope, but it's another to say, I measured it. I measured it, I weighed it, I photographed it, I have some kind of spectrographic data. Our guest is back. Dan Willis is with us. We have been talking about the possibility that the Orion mission, the one going back to the moon, and the Chinese and the Japanese, and who knows who else is going to jump into this mix, because now we have this Google X Prize that's offered $20 million to the first civilian team that can land a craft on the moon and move it 500 meters and send a transmission back. Sounds like a challenge, doesn't it, Dan?
Yeah, I just want to apologize. My cordless headset, I don't have EEG technology yet. It died on me, so what happened, I just disconnected me on the phone.
Quite all right. I understand. 3 hours is a long time for a telephone, even if it goes really, really fast on the air. So what do you think? Do you think Free Enterprise is going to get into the mix and the XPRIZE people will beat the NASA people to the moon?
No, Virgin Records is doing impressive things. Your guess is as good as mine, Brooks.
Well, I can tell you, at least in my industry, my colleague is one who not only participated in the electric car race. Remember the movie Who Killed the Electric Car? Well, that was about seven vehicles that were brought together to compete against one another for a viable electric vehicle, not powered by gasoline, one that just charges up batteries and goes. Some of those vehicles were submitted by General Motors, some by others, but one man submitted three vehicles in that race and won all the categories. And that vehicle is still around. So I know private industry can do it. I know there are smart people out there that can do it. Is $20 million enough money to slingshot something from the Earth to the moon? That's the question.
Well, a lot of people doing things in their garage, and I got personally involved after the Disclosure Project with meeting with a lot of different inventors and traveling all over the world to meet with them, looking at their devices and things that produced energy. And I've heard a lot of horror stories about trying to bring this stuff to market. National Security Acts being thrown on them and having their lives threatened. But there's a whole lot of people working on things right now. I can't see how they're going to squash, especially with the gas prices now. A lot of people working on, hydrogen, for the vehicles.
Well, I know. I've seen the hydroxy units out there that can crank out 2 or sometimes 3 liters per minute. Not really killing the battery in your vehicle, but certainly stressing it at 8 or 9 or 20 amps. And, a steady flow of 2 or 3 liters of what's typically called boom gas, which is cracked water into hydrogen and oxygen fed back into your breather. For gasoline engines, it's okay, but for diesel engines, it's really something. You're talking a major, major boost in thrust and increase in fuel mileage on the diesel vehicles. So I do know the technology's out there. And it's being sold, it's being built, it's being installed. There are people putting methanol injection on their vehicles, on diesel trucks that cost about $400 or $500 for the midline methanol injection. And it's about that cost for the hydroxy injection units too, which is competitive. And gosh, if it adds 9 or 10 miles per gallon to it, that's worth a lot of money these days.
Well, sure. Yeah, they get anywhere from, you know, just a few percent up to, I've heard as much as 70-75% you know, increase in gas mileage. But there are people who are doing 100% that we're working with, and that hopefully hopefully it'll come out soon. Yeah.
Well, it could be done. There's no doubt it can be done. You know, hydrogen, you really can't store enough online to go much more than about 80 miles unless you don't want room for anything else, including passengers. But you could certainly go as far as the normal commuter on just hydrogen without burning any gasoline at all.
Yeah, absolutely, yeah. Especially on demand, you don't have all the storage complications.
Yep, that's true. And there are, you know, I'm waiting for that technology too, because the on-demand ones that I've seen are supplementary only. They don't completely replace diesel fuel, but they are one heck of a supplement. That's for sure.
Well, I'm currently working with an inventor who claims we're going to fly him over here in about a week, and claims he's got 100%. He's able to get 400% better gas mileage with diesels. This all stemmed out of Space Energy Access Systems that I was working with Dr. Greer, you know, meeting different inventors and things. I'm still working with this inventor back in 2003.
That's awesome. I like when they hang in there and keep plugging away at it and, you know, go from prototype to prototype until they get it perfected. And then all you need to do is hook up with mass production and sell a gazillion of them. don't hang around waiting for somebody to give you money for it. Just put it on the market. There's plenty of market out there for it.
It seems to make sense. We've got a gazillion of these internal combustion engines, and it seems like a clean energy alternative, but at least we still have water.
Oh, yeah. And then biodiesel's coming along, too, and that's a lot cleaner to burn than petroleum. But, gosh, it's so rare. You just, you know, a plant here and a plant there, but no way can it keep up with demand. It's just not possible, not right now. But let's talk about something maybe more advanced. You know, we traditionally have strapped humans to a hydrogen peroxide and solid fuel rocket and launched their little butts up into orbit and then said, okay, now go to the moon. What if there's another propulsion system, one that doesn't take, you know, lighting up the atmosphere from 100 miles away to get up into orbit? What if somebody's figured out anti-gravity drive? Do you think any of that's out there in the private sector?
Maybe not in the private sector, but definitely in the black sector for sure.
Well, there are smart people out there, and there is no shortage of access to information now. With the internet, it's almost like Freedom of Information Act on steroids. There might be a few key pieces that are missing, and it might take a person much smarter than the average bear to be able to put them together. But I think they're out there, don't you?
Well, yeah, I think we're a bunch of primitive monkeys, actually, you know. We have a long ways to go, you know, understanding our reality.
Well, there's no doubt about that. We're still charging across the frozen tundra at one another with our battle axes in hands. Of course, we're primitive.
You know, it was interesting what he was saying about seeing the UFOs and using the infrared spectrum. And also, I'm listening to your show on Coast to Coast, Brooks, about the golden mean ratio. I used to work many years ago with Dr. Marcel Vogel, who was the head scientist at IBM, who invented the magnetic coating on hard drives and whatnot. And he, you know, you're familiar with his background. How he started with plant communication, and he opened up a laboratory and invited me as a research associate. the Psychic Research Incorporated, San Jose. And it was interesting looking at the microscope. He built his own electron microscope in the lab. And when you change to ultraviolet and infrared in the microcosmic structures, you could see whole different structures existing in different frequency bands. So there's a whole world out there that we're not perceiving. And,
I started out in the real boring part of chemistry, and I got fascinated with instrumental analysis, and I went on and on and on in it, and ended up being a TA, a professor's assistant, and taught, environmental chemistry and various, because I was fascinated with the instruments of it. But the interesting thing is that it's kind of now you see it, now you don't. In human interaction, we have a feeling that if we don't see it, we don't believe it. But once you get into the instrumental world, you start seeing things that have been around us all along, and we never noticed it. Things in the ultraviolet band, things in the infrared band, even lower frequencies than that. Curlian photography that they're taking of saplings that show a full mature plant above the sapling. The plant's just in 3D filling in another dimensional image of what it's supposed to be. And the same thing with fetuses. Human fetuses, we're seeing this. So there's a lot going on, and what I was mentioning about the golden mean is that in nature, this is a rate of increase, 1.618:1, that is in harmony with natural systems. And when you're outside of that ratio, it has a tendency to be a little destructively interfering. It doesn't prosper as well. So that's why the golden mean was so important in harmonizing energy systems.
It makes total sense, because if the nature of the cosmos is infinite, it's the perfect expression of it.
Yeah,
where it goes into infinity in perfect proportion.
But then
also,
even infinity.
Well, yeah, the thing that fascinated me was when we're working with quartz crystals, cutting them, and the crystal lattice structure terminates at a 52-degree angle, the same as the Great Pyramid in Egypt, which is based on golden mean mathematics. And one thing that Dr. Vogel said, it all stuck with me, is that these metaphysical laws are akin to the physical laws, in that say in radio broadcast, if you have a phased array of antennas that are all spaced equally apart and they're tuned to the exact same wavelength, you have a logarithmic gain. Well, in nature, crystals are natural phased ray geometric structures, you could say. And it appears that the structure in mathematical with the golden mean is somehow tied into a mathematical structure that the universe is operating. It's beyond my head. I see a lot of indicators that indicate it in that direction.
Well, Tesla was not the only one that experimented with this. When I went to Tibet, I saw evidence that they were thinking along the same lines, but of course, they didn't come to the same conclusion that Tesla did, because Tesla started applying electricity and motion and resonance. And what I found was so incredible, and what, ended up going in the third volume of the Arc of Millions of Years, this thing called Unlocking the Secret, was that it took very little energy, almost microscopic energy when you compare against what it is you're trying to move or accomplish, when cycled in this ratio of 1.618 to 1, as close to it as you can get, you can make a 6-inch steel I-beam look like a spaghetti noodle with very little weight, oscillated at exactly the right frequency.
Well, you could almost see how that works with the mathematics being in complete harmony and in a ratio going harmonically. In other
well, that's
words,
true. True. And the harmonic peaks go out at a 1.618 to 1 ratio. A little larger than the next space and a little larger than the next one. And if you apply those frequencies at those harmonic points, all at the same time, you get a tremendous amount of energy.
That would make sense, because normally when you put a pulse of energy, it'll have harmonics, but it will diminish over the spectrum. It'll attenuate down. But if you have a method of resonance where the harmonics are in resonance with the fundamental, it would seem that you'd have maximum energy transfer.
Well, here's a good example. Let's suppose that you're in an airplane, you're in a jet airplane, and you're at 40,000 feet, and the pilot comes on and says, it's okay now to use electronic devices. You plug in your iPod, you put on your headphones that have a little teeny tiny AAA battery inside of it, and you flip a switch for your active noise reduction, and the plane goes away. It's silent. What you've actually done is there's a microphone on those headphones that pick up the noise of the airplane. They then rebroadcast the noise of the airplane 90 degrees out of phase. It completely destroys the noise of the airplane. That's why it gets quiet. Well, imagine what would happen if it picked up the noise of the airplane and rebroadcasted the noise of the airplane right on top of the noise of the airplane and exactly in phase. It would probably deafen you. It would be so loud. That's the difference. And that's really what human consciousness can do to energy.
That's a good analogy.
We're almost like a human amplifier. So when you're talking about an electronic printed circuit, whether it's made of silicone or whether it's made of fluorine or whatever, and you're talking about symbiotically relating it to human consciousness, this is probably the principle that's being applied. Sort of a biofeedback amplifier of phenomenal proportions.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I've always been fascinated in this area of research. There seems to be a lot of indicators that there is a a matrix, so to speak, of alignment of these geometrical energies. Everywhere you study, I'm sure you studied quite a bit, Brooks, from listening to you, there's a lot of indicators that the golden mean ratio has profound implication in all this.
Oh, yeah. I was at an expo in Shasta. It was put on by Shalimar Productions. And one of my old friends, Patrick Flanagan, was there, and he decided to put on a sound demonstration for us in the room. He played Fibonacci ratio sounds overlaid over one another. First one, then the next, then the next, then the next. And I think he overlaid 6 or 7 frequencies on top of one another. And then he said, okay, I want you to stand up now because you are all hearing something different. Stand up now, and I want you to move 6 or 7 seats to the left and then move 6 or 7 seats to the right in this auditorium. And guess what happened? The pitch changed as we moved through the room. Because what he had done is he had stacked these sounds so that they formed a standing wave in the room. And as you moved along the wave with your body, you got a different pitch because it was constructively or destructively interfering with different segments of that Fibonacci sequence of sounds. That was pretty cool.
What a brilliant mind, yes.
So when someone like Jesus says, and ostensibly it's recorded in scripture or historical records somewhere, and he says, if you have the faith, let's call it consciousness, of a mustard seed, you could move a mountain.
Yes, if you're in alignment.
Yeah, there you go.
Yes.
So I'm not saying that you could mass produce a consciousness machine, because most people I know are not conscious that they're conscious. I don't think it would work. It would be a paperweight in their living room. But some people are aware enough, awake enough, and master enough of their own thought processes that maybe they could make it work.
Yeah, you know, it's interesting, you know, the old thing with, you know, quartz crystals and everything is being used in cultures throughout the world in similar manners, you know. I'm not much into the New Age stuff, but I always found it fascinating what scientific research has been done in that area. And I went to the mines and bought the first crystals for Dr. Vogel. We cut about 2 dozen for medical doctors in the Bay Area and had some amazing transformations happening with people, even some dematerializations of a tumor that I saw in home, all with thought and intention tuned through a laser-like structure of quartz, and also worked with structuring of water, where there was a winery that was in Sonoma that were actually able to change the finishing process of the wine from a cheap wine to a very expensive one using a 7-turn right-hand spiral of the liquid running around the tuned crystal. So there's an interesting relationship between water, H2O, and SiO2, the quartz structure, and they both have these hexagonal symmetries to them, a 52-degree angle, which, you know, ties back into the golden ratio again.
Well, that's right. The hurricanes and polar magnetic alignments or magnetic patterns left on Jupiter, on Venus, on even in the, like I said, the core of hurricanes, you get this hexagonal shape, this six-sided shape that's perfectly geometrically shaped. But the interesting thing is that if you join the points of the hexagon, what you end up with is the star inside. You end up with the Merkaba, which is really ancient geometry. They understood this.
Very fundamental.
So
no,
I guess I'm waiting for the craft that has a spinning Merkaba shape on the inside of it. And just spins up to about 120,000 RPM and lifts off the ground.
It's interesting, the shape and the shape of galaxies, aren't they? You know, the craft.
Well, maybe who knows? We may hear more out of water yet.
just scratching the surface, I'm sure. If we fast forward 100 years today, we'll be looking back at the conversation and say, yeah, they were starting to understand it back then.
I don't think it's going to take hundreds of years. Honestly, I don't think we have hundreds of years. I know the people that you hang with, and they feel pretty much the way I do. I don't think we have, you know, several lifetimes or generations to sit around and say, wouldn't it be neat if we could do this? We better be getting about it right now.
Yeah, we better fast forward. Absolutely.
So what have you got coming up now, Stan, or Dan? What are you working on?
Well, besides the hydrogen, I'm meeting with Dr. Greer and Shasta in about a week. We're going to do a sea study contact. I'll bring my infrared viewer just to see if I see anything that other people have seen. I just do my own little research work. I'm kind of an independent researcher, and still work with inventors, hope to see something come out, and once in a while I'll do a radio show in the hopes that maybe somehow this will leak out into the mainstream, and because what they're saying about UFOs meeting, they can't deal with the government, so they're going to try to come to the people, because there's this perpetual loop that's going on where, the government agents can't do anything, our military can't do anything, and the black ops are tied in with the CIA and NSA operatives who are controlling media. And so the only way this is going to really come out, and it's based on what 500 people, testimony, is the average guy out there, not the ones that listen to all the far out radio conversations, starts to become aware that this UFO thing is much more than just welcome Space Brothers, that type of thing, that it has to do with a whole lot more on this planet, that a whole new world that, as the ET that said this to Colonel Corsola when they asked him to turn down the radar, said, Colonel Corsola said, what's in it for me, And the extraterrestrial said, a new world if you could take it. And I think that's the point that we're at. We need to accept that new world and understand our creative role in creating that new world.
I think the human race has been to this spot before. And maybe they made the right decision and found a new neighborhood. And maybe they didn't make the right decision and cataclysm took them like a sandcastle in the coming tide. But we're here now. We're awake, we're aware, we're communicating at an unbelievable rate. And with unbelievable data. And I think with that, and this kind of interested me when I asked George Noory, I was at a event that he was at, and I wanted to ask him a question face-to-face, one interviewer to another. And I said, George, when you sit down in front of that microphone, I know you came from the broadcast world, and not from, the scientific world or even the commercial world of engineering. Do you feel a sense of responsibility and a sense of awe that you have three-quarters of the world listening to you when you sit down in front of that microphone? And he said, absolutely. I feel, he said, like a profound movement of power, not power to him, but responsibility with getting the information out there and trying to reach as many people in an entertaining way. And he said sometimes it moves him to tears. And I thought that was quite profound. I found him to be very credible and very real. And it inspired me, to tell you the truth.
Yeah, I like George. He seems to be very, like you said, very, very credible and real. And it gives everybody, a fair shot at the information. And there's a lot of static and noise out there with all the craziness of all this, you know. So that's why I have to watch. You know, I have my own ideas about things, but, you know, I keep those to myself, you know. When I brought on a radio show, you were the first radio show I ever did, Brooke, you know.
Oh, how about that? Well, you did a great job, and you're doing a great job tonight. That's it makes my job easier. And the fact that we communicate so well, I can't wait to meet you. I may pop down to Shasta when you guys are there. I don't know. I've got a lot going on up here.
Would love to. I live in a cement geodesic dome on top of a mountain off grid, and I love exploring the realm of all the geometries, in science.
As do I. And one of these days, it's all going to work out for peaceful ends. And speaking of ends, another three-hour program has reached it. And I can't tell you how much I appreciate you coming on. I know, we've blown through 3 hours, like 5 minutes. We'll have to do it again. I would use the line, the fastest 3 hours in radio, but it's been taken.
Well, I always enjoy talking to books, and I'm looking forward to getting your book and some fascinating research that coincides exactly with everything I've studied in life.
Wonderful. That's perfect. I appreciate you coming on the program, Dan. You have yourself a wonderful week. And if you have any questions or anything comes up, be sure to drop me a line, and I will you too.
My pleasure, Brooks. Thank you very much.
All right. Good night, my friend.
Good night.
All right, that's it for X Squared Radio, August 24th. Don't miss next week. We have Tom Van Flandern coming on. We'll see ya. It has been a great pleasure to have you here with us this evening. Tell a friend about us, because every Sunday evening at 6 p.m. Eastern Time, we bring you the best 3 hours of exploration into the mysteries of the universe and of the Earth. If you're not getting all 3 hours, send us the call letters of your local station, and we'll do the rest. Remember, Earth Explorers, that you are Source. Everything we do will eventually affect the universe, so try to do it on purpose. Reach out for the good in people and help it to grow a little every day. And before long, you will have saved the planet. This is X Squared Radio saying, peace, Earth Explorers.